You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of February 7th, 2024. And should we have connected?
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alboy.
My name is Scott Chester.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a series spin-off humanist conversation about video games. That's this conversation right here. We're back. We took a little break off last week, and we just missed the Sony State of Play, which announced some big games, but most importantly, Death Stranding 2 content. So we are out here. I wanted to talk about some of those. Especially the Death Stranding stuff. I think we should save that for last so we don't completely ignore some of the other cool stuff that dropped from Sony's update.
Agreed.
I like this time of year because we get fun updates from publishers. The future is still hazy, so we can kind of imagine all the good, juicy stuff coming this year. I know Xbox has announcements coming up. There's rumors, by the way, did you see that there's rumors that they'll be releasing some Xbox titles on PlayStation 5?
Well, and Phil Spencer made some cryptic comments about, like, the future of the Xbox strategy, like very like, okay, like this is the continuing pivot towards Xbox as a service, you know.
If that's true, by the way, I hope that means that we get Game Pass on the Steam Deck, because that would be gas, like official support.
I hope we get Game Pass on the PlayStation, you know, like, I mean,
oh
like,
man, that's, I didn't even think about that.
I mean, that's the holy grail. Like, somewhere inside of Microsoft, there's a document that just, like, has the word Game Pass and arrows pointing to every platform.
And then, like, a big question mark, you know, for each.
And then after that, a bunch of dollar signs.
Question mark? Profit. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's the future. That's probably, like, another cast, maybe in a week. Yeah. I think he hinted at it's coming, like, really soon. So we'll have
I think it's supposed to be next week, so we might actually chat about it soon enough.
Yeah, next time. Okay, let's talk about some of the games that were announced during the State of Play. I want to talk to you about Judas.
Yes, I was okay. I'm glad you wanted to talk about this, because I wanted to bring it up, too. Okay,
so
here we go.
This is the latest game from BioShock creator Ken Levine and his ragtag bunch of people. This is a classic narrative single-player first-person shooter in the Ken Levine style, and boy, is it in the Ken Levine style, because
it really is. It's kind of like a Wes Anderson moment where it's like, I know exactly who made this game.
Yeah, man, is it what is it about the passage of time that just completely saps me of any interest in playing anything Ken Levine ever touches again? Like, this just looks so tedious to me.
I do wonder. Because he's been, I honestly don't know what Ken Levine's life is like. It seems very strange because it's like he's just kind of been underground for a long time. Like, who knows what he's been doing?
Which, to be fair, good for you. Like, that's way better than being aggressively online, as some other developers have been.
I guess that's true. You could, like, there's another path where he becomes the, like, Cliffy B or something, you know, or whatever. You
What's
know,
Cliffy
like,
B up to these days?
I think he's just shitposting on Twitter. Like, I mean, I don't actually know what the next game, but like, you're right. There's an alternate path where he just is like a extremely vocal, cranky old man of the games industry. But like, I think wasn't he doing like screenplays there for a while? Like, I remember he was attached to like a Logan's Run screenplay or something. Like, I think he's been doing writing, but I don't know if any of that stuff has seen the light of day. But now this Judas game seems to be, I don't actually know if they even gave it a date, but like, you know, it's at least real enough to make PlayStation want to, you know, fund/showcase it. So that's something, I suppose.
Yeah. What did you think of it? Did it look compelling to you at all?
I mean, the thing that I'm most interested in was the stuff that he was talking about after Irrational broke up, which is, he wanted to do more experimental narrative stuff in games.
Yeah.
But since that happened, there's been a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of different narrative focused games that have done experimental things. Whether it's, I can't remember the name of this game. It was the game that you played. It's kind of a sci-fi dystopia game. that is extremely branching narrative paths.
Oh, Citizen Sleeper?
Citizen Sleeper. Yep. Citizen Sleeper.
Great game. Great game.
Or everything from that to like Baldur's Gate, there have been pretty big milestones in storytelling in games in a number of respects. And so that stuff, I remember he used the term narrative Legos, you know, like clicking things together to make the story, to create the story out of blocks that of your choosing, blah, 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 which I think is a more interesting path than, hey, you're going to have magic on your left hand and guns on your right, because like we've done that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
But then this game sure does look like a lot of magic on your left and guns on your right, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if it's a scenario where he's just playing it safe for the initial rollout, but it does not look...
Or if they're marketing it like that, like maybe it is like there's heavy kind of narrative branching or something, and it's just hard to put that into a trailer.
There's even just elements though that seem like caricatures of something Ken Levine would make, you know? Like there's a cowboy... preacher on stage that's very like over the top, and then there's all these like downvotes and upvote likes, you know, like it feels like a crotchety guy complaining about social media without understanding social media, you know what I mean?
It could very well be. I mean, there's a style, there is clearly a, you know, an aesthetic that is even the kind of chunky cartoonish, you know, the hyper realistic, you know, character models. It reminds me of the BioShock games. So I don't know. I'm interested more. I think I'm more interested than you just because I have to know, like, what have you been doing for the past? Like, when did BioShock Infinite come out?
Yeah.
2011 or something. Like, I don't even know when. You know?
Yeah. Well, maybe this will be one of the Scott takes one for the team games. Let me know if it's
good. I mean, it really does have that written all over it, by the way. Like, this is like a classic. Like, just looking at this, I'm like, this seems like one of those like moth to a flame things that I just can't resist.
Yeah. I'm stronger than you in that regard. Okay, really, what else? Is. What else from here looks cool?
This is just kind of a side note. Like, have you done much with the Metro series? I have like almost no... I have almost no experience with it. And then they had this like VR game that is supposed to be coming out.
I played Metro Exodus. I think the Metro games are really good. They're very brutal and kind of unforgiving, but I enjoy them quite a bit. Yeah. I mean, again, I haven't played one since Metro Exodus. I don't have a VR unit. So
no.
maybe this year will be the year of VR.
I mean, this and the Half-Life game seem like, you know, kind of traditional games, but given a new spin based off of the medium.
Yeah.
And so I don't, it did seem kind of interesting. And plus, like, I had heard the same things where wasn't Metro the game where bullets were also your currency.
Yeah. It's one of the ways that it's brutal. Yeah. It's a really cool idea. It almost kind of reminded me a little bit of Pathologic, like, or there's just like an Eastern European design sensibility that I appreciate with something like Metro. You know, if I had like a, Apple VR Vision Pro.
Yep.
I would buy this, but well, I wouldn't buy it because I would run out of money because the Vision Pro costs $3,500.
Yeah, and then you'd be too busy, you know, working on spreadsheets or whatever they want you to do in that thing versus like
spatial computing, baby. It's the future. Yeah, so that looks cool, but yeah, I'm not gonna play that.
They did another Rise of the Ronin look of like what the much more like gameplay focused.
I am surprised by the Rise of the Ronin trailer and how much it feels like just a genuine open world game. The ability to grappling hook into wings, into a horse, like it gave me a lot more Ghost of Tsushima vibes than I had originally thought after the first trailer. In a way that honestly isn't exciting to me. Like, I don't know. There's now that I've actually seen the gameplay, you see the UI, you understand that it's clearly Neo's classic, sometimes painfully challenging block and parry and sort of energy system. It feels like I kind of get it, if that makes sense, in a way that I didn't when I first saw it. So I don't know. I am now less interested in it now that I've actually seen what it is.
I always forget that this game is coming so soon. Like, it's in March. So yeah, like March. It's one of those that like we'll know very, very soon. I played the first Neo. I didn't finish it. And then I don't think I played Neo 2.
Me neither, yeah. Same
so
thing.
Maybe I've had more space, you know, maybe I've had enough space to actually have this, you know, take a run at this.
And Neo was good. There's just a layer of complexity there that makes it a little bit off-putting.
Oh, yeah. All the stances. Yeah, like, the it's stances. Like, it's complex yeah. enough, and then you multiply it by three because of all the stances.
And Rise of the Ronin will have stances, and it will have weapons, including modern Western weapons like pistols and flamethrowers. Yeah. And you can augment all of those. So yeah. I don't know. I think there's a degree of like maybe I'm just I don't have it in me. You know what I mean?
It's fatiguing.
It is. Yeah. It's one of those things too where I know that if I picked this game up, I almost certainly wouldn't beat it. You know?
Right.
And so yes. Now I'm like, okay, well, I mean, it's March. It's a slow time period, but there's still some games from last year I could play. You know? Yeah. So we'll see. Rise of Ronin.
There's Dragon's Dogma.
Dragon's Dogma looks cool. That's also out in March. Is it the same day?
It's soon, like
it's on the same day near. As Rise of the Ronin. Yeah,
that's so wild, like how that happens.
Yeah,
we talked about this recently on the show, and the trailer that I saw, honestly, it makes me a little bit more interested in it because
Agreed.
It has that like yeah,
it looks
funny.
Like
it's like
Monster
the opposite
Hunter.
Of Rise of the Ronin. Yeah,
you know,
it
like,
does. Yeah.
There's a lot of Monster Hunter vibes from this, like even the way that when you're fighting a huge monster, the character just kind of comically. Makes huge attack gestures, but no yeah. reaction from the monster, you know?
Yeah.
I also love the way that the trailer showcases that you can jump on monsters' heads. It's just like, hey, yeah. you can jump on their heads. Here's six different scenes yeah. where someone's right. jumping on their head. The wizard making the ice that then shatters into like an ice bridge so he can jump off and like hit an ogre with his wizard staff.
Yeah.
Like it seems excessive, you know what I mean? Like someone had a like a pitch for this trailer saying we need to tell people that you can jump on shit. Lo and behold, yeah.
it is stylish. I mean, I do like, again, I didn't play that first game. It has such a cult following, but this does kind of have the Monster Hunter like kind of frenetic action
yeah.
and there's like a bunch of people doing it, but then it kind of reminds me of a FromSoft aesthetic, which I find interesting.
There's a scene where a character jumps, of course, jumps up again, but does like a quadruple somersault with daggers.
Yeah,
you know, like it is just weirdly it's kind of fun because you have a world where visually it looks like it's taking its very seriously classic
exactly.
dark fantasy.
Yeah.
But then you just have the actions of a game that seems like it's kind of knowingly tongue-in-cheek. And I'm curious
yes.
to see, like, from a tone perspective, if it walks that line, you know? Like, because
I
want to play a game that is not as self-serious, especially when it comes to fantasy. You know, I don't want to play Borderlands fantasy, but some
right.
in between that and, like, you know, Dragon's Age would be
yes,
would be cool.
Something that is a little bit more, there could be a little of that Monster Hunter
yeah.
ethos in it.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's delicious food and cats that will make it for you.
Yes. Yes, please.
What right. else?
Silent Hill 2 getting a remake.
Yeah. They've been... I feel like this has been floating around for a while, but this is what? Probably the closest we've...
Yeah.
The closest look that has been out there.
They also released the short message, which is like a playable... A playable
trailer.
Man, come on, guys. You don't get to do that. You don't fucking get to do that. It kind of...
I haven't played it yet. Have you played it?
No, I heard it's not very good. So
that's a bummer.
Yeah, I didn't really bother.
I should at least download it in case one day they pull it, and so I'll have to keep my PS5 forever because it will be on the hard drive.
Are you offended? Are you as offended as I am that they would do this? They know what they're doing.
They gotta know,
they
right?
They fucking
like,
know,
they
what, they're
know what they're doing.
PT. But that being said, I am excited for the Silent Hill 2 remake. I am not the Ari fan that you are and so many other people are. So
yeah.
I've not touched the Resident Evil remakes, and I just keep hearing over and over again how good they are. I love Silent Hill 2. It's probably my favorite horror game of all time. It
yeah.
creeps me the fuck out to this day. And I'm excited for a remake. I don't think they're going to be pushing the envelope as much as RE4 has, or certainly
right.
as much as Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has, based upon the look of the trailer. But
yeah.
I think given a chance to play it again on PlayStation 5, I think that's awesome. I do think it's really silly, though, how the trailer hides the reveal of Pyramid Head. Like, we don't know
right.
fucking Pyramid Head. Like, we know what he looks like.
What if they add on, like, you know, Octagon Head or something? You know, like, what if they're like, ah, this is the remake? Like,
yeah. I guess if there's two of them in there or something. Yeah, I'd be
I mean, as someone who is a Silent Hill 2 fan, I don't know. Gosh, I played like a random amount of Silent Hill, but like as someone, I feel like Silent Hill 2 is clearly, you know, I don't know. It feels like that is the Silent Hill, but I don't have much experience with it. Like,
requisite shout out to Shattered Memories, which we haven't mentioned or name dropped on the podcast in a while.
Oh yeah, I mean Shattered Memories, an all timer of in the series and just like all timer underappreciated game.
Yeah.
But I mean, what is it about a Silent Hill? What do you think they can do with a Silent Hill 2 remake that either, like, do you want them to depart from the original one, or do you want them to just like expand on it, or like what's the hope for it?
That's a good question. I mean, quality of life for sure, because those games are always a little bit finicky in that era.
Yeah.
But I would like to see departing or expanding on it. Absolutely. Like, maybe there's another playable character that's involved. You know, there's a lot of like little weird side characters in those games. You know, maybe having like a foray into that experience could be cool. The story is notoriously sort of vague and both vague and convoluted, you know? Right. So I think expanding on it a little bit could be cool. Yeah, I think there's fun things you can play around with. Different enemy types, enemy archetypes.
I mean, it kind of goes back to a frequent conversation we have these days around remakes. And as we speak, we're less than a month away from Final Fantasy VII. And so we're just in this... mode where we could get a like straight up remake, or maybe Silent Hill 2 is a radical departure and like it takes the story in a different way. Like it's, you know, I feel like there's a bit more history in that series where they might want to play it more safe. But I'm interested to see what people knowledgeable in Silent Hill have to say about it.
Yeah, the Silent Hill lore. I'm not going to replay it, but I'm excited for it.
Yeah. What else?
Sonic. There's some Weeb games going on.
I never know if whenever I see a Sonic game, I legitimately don't know if this is a new Sonic game or a remake of a new-ish Sonic game or what, you know, like.
Yeah.
Shadow is here. I mean.
Sonic X Shadow Generations. Is this a remake?
Maybe. I feel like Generations was, maybe that's one of their new series titles. Because I feel like Sonic Generations was definitely a game.
Yeah. I don't think I'm ever going to play a Sonic game ever again. I think is the reality that I need to accept.
What was the Sonic game that came out, not last year, but the year before, that people liked? The Breath of the Wild Sonic game.
The open world one? Did people like
it? Yes. People did like that because it was like the most, like it was the biggest risk they'd taken for decades, you know? Yeah. This looks very much in the vein of like what they've been trying to recapture, which is just not as interesting to me, I think.
Yeah. Maybe I should play the open world game just to like give them props.
Have a taste.
Have a little nibble. Yeah, we'll see. Shall we pivot a little bit to Kojima-san?
I do want to say one thing though. This Dave the Diver DLC that they're release.
This is the one with Godzilla.
God, so funny. Well, it's funny because they use the explicit like from the 50s Godzilla music and like the sound and stuff, even though it's like a new Godzilla character model or whatever. I just really liked that they went that direction with it.
That's pretty great. There's no way that I would like replay Dave the Diver, you know what I mean?
I mean maybe they'll do a thing where it's
like a free update. Know,
exactly, like it'll go into whatever save you have and you can activate it, you know?
That'd be cool. I mean I like Godzilla enough to like play the Godzilla storyline. That could be cool.
Well, and I can just imagine the characters, especially like the otaku nerd, like knowing that Godzilla is real, like seeing him freak out about it was very funny.
And there's going to be like a Mecha Godzilla somewhere in there. Like the game is so dense. I'm sure there's more references than just what we've seen, you know?
Feeding Godzilla, you have to make so much sushi.
Well, I was going to say the other way around. Can you eat Godzilla?
Like eating Godzilla?
Yeah, maybe. Godzilla sushi? I don't know.
Becoming radioactive.
That's how you become Spider-Man.
All right, but to your point, yes, let's pivot to the dark echo of Ken Levine, Hideo Kojima.
Okay, let's talk about Pheasant first.
Yes,
so you know, Pheasant. This is a announcement, and it's just Kojima and some dude. I forget his name.
Okay, is this a real person or is this an actor?
I think it's a real person. He sounds
Is it a Danish. Sony exec?
I don't know.
I'm getting some real like Alan Wake vibes here, so I'm just saying.
He has like, he has like a Finnish accent, right?
Yeah.
Like the Alan Wake characters. Here's the thing. You never know. Like, what if that's the actor? You know?
It could be.
Anything is possible with Kojima. So they basically announced that, hey, guys, I'm living the dream. I get to make a movie. That's also a video game, but also it's a movie. So check it out.
It's funny because he says, at least this is the translation since I do not speak Japanese.
Yes, I was going to quote this too. Go for it.
I am confident that this title will be the culmination of my work.
Yes. Yes. I think he's got so many choice quotes. Here's how he defines it. He says, of course it is an interactive game. Of course. I mean, it's Kojima.
Of course. My favorite type of game is
interactive ones. Game. None of those non-interactive games, but it is also a movie at the same time. Yeah, there you go. See, in terms of look, story, theme, cast, acting, fashion, and sound.
And by the way, he has a super, I mean, this vest that he's wearing has to have cost $2,000.
Okay, we need, Kojima-san threads breakdown. His suit is amazing. Like, his jacket has two massive collars, which I love. Like, he's being birthed out of his suit. If you check his kicks, those are sneakers that have that were done in partnership, I think, with the company called like Dot or Docs, that has a Neon Genesis Evangelion heel clip attached to it.
Great.
So he's showing his weeb pride, which I think is great. I believe these shoes were in the first Death Stranding.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or a version of these shoes. Like, there's some partnership with someone on his team was like really into them, and so they showed up in Death Stranding. So,
oh my god.
Anyway, he's got dope fashion sense, and he must care about fashion because fashion is one of the elements that is going to be a movie and an interactive game.
I mean, it's the culmination of his work.
He's gonna transcend barriers. It's a new genre. He hasn't named it yet. It's so funny because
that's the thing, though, because like after Death Stranding, when he's like, oh, it's a new type of game, motherfucker, now he's warped us so that we actually use strand game in a non-ironic sense.
I know. It's why he's gonna do it again. Wait, and I feel bad for the folks, the Alan Wake dude, Sam Lake, because he already tried this. You know, they already tried to make Quantum Break like a mix of game and movie, and I've actually played a couple of these, not these style, but like attempts like this, and I just, it doesn't matter what Kojima says. I don't know what the fuck he means. I just don't know what he means. Like, what is he playing on it? Like, in what way is fashion a defining characteristic of either a movie or a game? You know, like, am I gonna wear the game? Is this a game I can wear?
I mean, if you think about it, though, like, fashion has been the one of the main ways that video games have monetized and driven the business for the past however long, like with all of the skins and stuff like that. That's so fair. I mean, like, it could be a commentary on that stuff.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. It's a bizarre, the list that of the things that he mentions that are both are movie based. It's so weird to me, right? Like, the look should be a film. Okay, so like film grain?
Yeah. Yes.
Fixed cameras? Is it like shot, reverse shot? Like
it'll go from like 120 hertz to 30 frames per second sometimes to make it seem more cinematic. Like,
well, the other thing that I find so interesting, right, is I don't believe that Kojima, I don't think it's possible for him to make a game that isn't weird. Like, I just don't, it's not in him, you know? And so we have Quantum Break, which was both a television show and a video game. We have some like interactive games that are all sort of FMV where you make decisions and then what happens on screen changes. And then we also have the similar ones like Man of Medan or in fact, it was announced that there was a remake at State of Play, the Until Dawn game, right? Those are also kind of movies. There's major actors portraying the characters. Yeah. Much of it are cinematics and you're just making sort of strategic decisions during it. So I have to assume it's not that. That's not the style of the game he's making.
Yeah.
So what is it? Like, I don't know. Do I have to go to a movie theater to like experience it? Is it split? Like, is it multiple moments? My God. You know,
it's like, okay, now it's time to leave your house and go here to watch.
But I also love, he calls it a movie. Like, it's not TV show. or extended series. And that's, I think that indifference is important, because when I think of the way that you play a long game, it's much more akin to the way that you would consume a television series, right? Like there are multiple chapters and multiple arcs, and it builds towards one overall arc. But the commitment of, say, playing all of Death Stranding, in which there are literally multiple chapters, feels pointedly different. Or it, rather, the comparison is stronger, I think, between that and, say, I don't know, watching Game of Thrones or some TV series than it is to, say, like watching a movie, you know?
They also make a big deal of saying that it's a return to action espionage.
Yeah, yeah.
Which suggests some sort of stealth, you know? So, and I don't know, I feel like there's... I feel like there's a non-zero possibility that this is a like a tribute to like the golden age of James Bond games or something.
Yeah, the slow pan out to the Columbia Pictures studio feels like weirdly sort of acknowledging that, like the system.
Because I mean, there's and that would like loop in with the style and the music. Because like, if there's someone that's again, if there's someone that's obsessed with like a period piece, I could totally see him getting going really down the rabbit hole of like late 1950s, early 60s aesthetic.
You know?
Especially with the Hollywood connection, all that stuff, you know.
I mean, I'm fascinated by it. It's so funny because before Death Stranding, I would have called this vaporware. Because I think I called Death Stranding vaporware. I was like, this game isn't real.
Yeah.
You know? In fact, after watching the Death Stranding 2 trailer, which we'll talk about in a moment, I went back and I watched an hour and a half story recap of the first Death Stranding, and I re-listened to both of our debriefs on Death Stranding. And I did, in fact, call this game not real, and if it is real, it's going to be bad. And now I just, like, I've eaten crow so much that I think that whatever Pheasant is going to be real, and it's going to be fucking awesome.
As Kojima once said, you were ashamed of your words and deeds.
Yeah, exactly. He caught me. He caught me.
Okay, speaking of potential vaporware, let's talk about Death Stranding 2.
Ooh, the second trailer for this. Man, there's so much to talk about. So I've got theories and things based upon listening and thinking about Death Stranding recently. But just high level, what a trailer. This guy knows how to make trailers, you know?
He really, I mean, you can see why he is so obsessed with movies, because he just clearly loves making trailers.
Yeah, George
and
Miller.
Has loved it for 20 plus years.
Yeah, and so much so that he puts trailers in the game.
Yes.
George Miller is in this.
Yes, and playing the kind of Guillermo del Toro role.
Yes, by the way. Based upon name conventions, what do you think his name is?
Oh my God, that's true. Wait, what was Guillermo del Toro's name?
It was Death Stranding 1. Was it? It wasn't Die Hardman. That was the other.
No, dude. Die Hardman was the kind of military leader guy.
It was like, fuck. What was it? Something.
I forget what his name.
Hold on, we got to look this up. Guillermo del Toro, Death Stranding. Dead Man.
Oh, Dead Man. Okay.
Because he is a dead man.
But, I mean, you could see him, like, because he's clearly some sort of, like, he's wearing some sort of, like, weird, like, military uniform. Yeah, or, like, maybe it's even, like, a doctor's thing or something, or some combination.
He gives me, like, SS vibes, though, you know? Yes. Like a U-boat captain or something.
Yeah, like, you could see this guy being named like Dr. Death or something,
or like Captain One Arm, because he's got only something, one arm. You know, like,
oh man, I mean, just the game, the trailer opens from 0 to 100 where there's immediately, you know, he's doing some weird operation.
Yep.
Fragile is wearing a mask that is comprised of two weird robo hands covering her face. Like, I'm like, man, they just go directly into the aesthetic.
Yeah. The hands of the robo hands are super cool. Yeah. And I love, too, like, the way that it connects to Death Stranding. Because one of the things I realized when I was rewatching content was that if you recall in Death Stranding, there's like golden chiral blooms sometimes that you can harvest, and they bloom in the shape of hands.
Yes.
You know, or when there's a void out, there's like a handprint on the ground. So there's like
all
a
the
lot
enemies
of...
use do like instead of feet, they have hands that they're walking around.
Yeah,
on.
Like, so it's cool to see the like callback. You know, I have to assume they're like, I don't know, cool chiral hands that she uses.
Yeah. Also just like immediately into full body horror, like, you know, on multiple levels, like the popping weirdos out there are going to love this one. You know, Fragile gets some of the ink splattered on her and it turns her skin old, you know, like the rain used to.
So side note, why does Fragile have fresh, lovely skin now?
I was just going to ask that. I was like, did something happen that I forgot about? Like,
no,
because that wasn't resolved in the first game, right?
We do not have anything from the first game to explain why she does not have aged hands. So one theory was like, okay, well, maybe this is in the past.
Yeah.
Before that. I don't think so. Like, that would be a weird guess.
Yeah.
One theory that I was reading online was that she may have become like a repatriate where, you know, when you die, you sort of respawn. Mm. But I don't think that would clear her hands. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I was I thought that same thing, too. I'm glad I wasn't off track there. Also, she has a quote in it that she says, she says, "I'm fragile in name only."
Yeah.
I'm like, man, they're really just going straight back to the well.
Love it, dude. Love it. Yeah, it's so good. I guess somebody looked at some symbols or some math problems or something that like appear somewhere in the trailer, suggesting suggesting that the formulas were related to time, implying that there might be some time travel shenanigans. So,
I mean, I could see that because they end the trailer by saying like that the BB was destroyed 4 years before you met Lou or whatever. And I'm like, oh, no, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless like Lou. I mean, OK, so we'll keep going, I guess. But the next weird thing, the weird doll.
Oh, my God. And like the weird frame rate on the doll.
Yes, dude. It reminds me a lot of the frame rate of the cartoon skins from the Spider-Man games. Because they all have, I don't know what it is, like 20, 30 frames per second or something.
Yeah.
But it's jarring and like a cartoon. I thought that was really cool too. I don't know what this...
Why were they blue and gray in the scene after the operation?
So the washed out colors means they're on the beach, I think. So in the first Death Stranding, sometimes when they were on the beach, they would be black and white.
Okay.
And in fact, Death Stranding 2... On the beach. I think the implication is that they explore the world that the beach is on.
Right.
And I think that's what the ship is about. Like they have this ship traverse the beach for whatever reason. I don't know why they're traversing the beach, but.
Well, because they're also still clearly in the real world trying to make more chiral network connections out into like Mexico and like all kinds of like crazy stuff. So like they're trying to bridge the beach to the real world,
maybe, who knows? I think that's really cool. The environments that they show look awesome. Like the landscape of Mexico looks really cool and evocative. I think there's some cool beach stuff. There's like a world where everything is floating, kind of like the rocks float like along the chiral bridges and stuff.
Yep.
With like ink coming up. I think visually speaking, it looks really awesome.
It looks striking. Like it's just the technology, the engine that they have going, the landscape, those they just do like one shot after another of like kind of a like a high desert kind of, you know, Mexico style, and then a Saharan looking, you know, like sandy desert.
Yeah,
and,
like dust storm. Yeah.
Yeah, like the thing that was most chilling to me though was there was that bridge that he was running on, and in the background you see like a huge city, and I'm like, holy crap, like what does that mean? What does a city mean in the context of the world of Death Stranding? Like, isn't that just a nuclear explosion waiting to happen at every second because there's so many people in it? Like, what is the deal with a city?
One thought is maybe it's not a city. Like, maybe these are just industrial lights, you know? Like, this could be some kind of like weird... what's the name of the city in Final Fantasy VII? You know, like...
Oh, like Midgar.
Yeah, it's like a Midgar style. You know, like most of it is in service to some sort of unknown engine, you know, for all I know. So...
I thought there was little hints of some gameplay stuff where, like, there was a flood that washed a bridge away, which I thought was extremely cool. Like going further into the environmental effects has a lot of potential.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I'm already anticipating that players can build dams.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be cool. I also find it interesting, just to, again, pure speculation on gameplay, the drawbridge word that they use, right? Which is to say, like, you can make connections, but you can also remove those connections.
Yes.
And I think that the, I want to find the quote that the drawbridge motto is. It's something like, stick and rope to protect and connect, I want to say.
Let's see, because it was a logo, right?
Like, yeah.
They put the little crest of the thing on it.
It's on like Fragile's shirt. Oh, here it is. Both stick and rope to protect and connect together for tomorrow, right? And we know from the first Death Stranding, like the stick is violence, right? Even Troy Baker's character says, oh, like you chose stick this time or whatever.
Yeah.
And the rope is the sort of nice thing. I think it's interesting to me that Fragile's new company implies that we can connect, but sometimes we need to disconnect. And what I think could be interesting here is exploring this idea of like, yes, we can connect and unify, but sometimes we shouldn't, right? And I think in the era that this game is being developed versus the era that Death Stranding, the first one, was being developed, I think that's a meaningful thematic change to imply that, like, look, not everyone, sometimes you got to beat ass, you know, like sometimes you don't want to connect. I the implication that I get is I actually wonder if there's going to be some, maybe not directly PvP elements, but maybe there's going to be some spurn other players. Maybe there's going to be some like faction elements here where you can withdraw your connections to other players, you know, to
or like maybe some sort of downside, even if it's not malicious. It's like you have to be willing to put up with this penalty if you're gonna make this, like in Death Stranding 1, the connections were, I think, universally positive, and like there wasn't ever a drawback from working together.
I think that's right.
Yeah,
and the theme and the hope of it is a very optimistic one, which I agree with. But again, like, this is after January 6th now, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So,
I mean, Kojima had that quote where he even said, like, oh yeah, like after the events of January 6th, and I think he mentioned after the pandemic started, like, I basically rewrote Death Stranding 2, and I'm like, oh man, like, this is, you know, I'm very, you
dude,
know.
Yeah, I cannot wait. Like, that quote makes me just like, because every moment when we play this game is going to be like, what is this man thinking? it's such a cool treat.
It's such a dense, like, series of illusions as well. I don't know if you caught it, but when, what's the enemy's name? The Troy Baker character, the freaky looking,
Higgs.
When Higgs attacked the cyborg ninja, the melody that he plays on his guitar is Lou's theme from the first game.
Yeah. I don't love it when they bring back dead enemies, but fuck me if Troy Baker's not chewing scenery and loving his job, man. Like, he is loving his job. It just feels it's so fun to watch this scene.
Well, it's also just like the effort that they put into the performance capture on the main characters in these games. You know, Norman Reedus is, you know, he's at full Reedus. You know, this is the most Reedus we've ever seen on screen. And it's like that for every character that they show in this trailer.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Even the baby.
Yeah, even the baby. I love the baby too. So let's talk about the baby real quick, because I think one of the things that I'm excited about too is just messing around with the parent dynamics. So I think these are theories that I was reading online that I sort of kind of totally buy, right? But like, my assumption is that Elle Fanning, who's in this trailer and was the woman in that had like the octopus rings on her that squirted ink in the beginning, like, she's carved out, right? We see her on the table later with black hair, which I assume was colored by the tar or what have you.
Yeah.
She is Lou, grown up, right? And especially if there's time travel, like, maybe that's a possibility. But also there's the weird, like, ghost baby Lou in the BB-8 unit or the BB unit. So, like, my assumption is there's some, like, I don't know if you remember Mama and the, like, Ha and Ka themes that were going on, where, like, the body and the spirit could be separated. Yeah. I wonder if they're playing with that a little bit, right? Where maybe, like, Lou's spirit is in the BB unit, but her body is Elle Fanning's character.
Oh yeah,
and that's where
yeah.
we see some of the like strings from her. As well, she's,
the
walking
string
around.
Imagery is all over this trailer. So like, you're right. Like that could be. You're right. That could be the connection between those two.
And it could also explain what the weird little doll is, right? Like that could be a doll that's just literally inhabited by some other spirit.
Yeah.
You know, like that could be a person who's just in a doll, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's some cool themes I think already that are kind of like hinted at that I think are pretty neat.
So at this point though, it's all they say is 2025.
Yeah.
And you gotta think that it's probably late 2025, you know, I mean, just when this thing is going to come out. Between now and when it comes out, do I even consume any more media about this? Or is it, because I'm already in, fully in, like unequivocally day one. But like, I almost want to be surprised, but also I just want to know more and more about what's going on here.
Yeah, I thought about that as well. The conclusion that I came to was, I don't think that Kojima's going to spoil his own story, you know?
That's yes. And to be fair, he has purposefully the trailers are part of his games. He's purposefully misled people with his trailers multiple times in the past, so he probably wants us to watch them.
Exactly right. And I think that you know, looking back at the original Death Stranding trailers, you know, where we see the like five people floating in the sky, there's nothing about there's nothing about that scene that is sort of critical to your understanding of Death Stranding. And in fact, it's still even open to interpretation who those people floating in the sky are, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think that I'll lose much by watching the content. Yeah. And I think the way that they're built is so, so much informed by the way that people speculate that I just feels like, again, it's like you said, it's a game of its own. I am looking forward to chewing every little moment. Again, I re-listened to and watched like 3 hours of Death Stranding content and then rewatched this trailer. You know, that is what I'm excited for.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, it's... and, you know, this isn't the culmination of his work. That's Pheasant. So, I mean,
That's true. Are we settling for something less than perfection by playing Death Stranding 2, Kojima?
Yeah, we'll play the blasé Death Stranding 2 just as we wait for Pheasant, the culmination of his work.
This feels like someone's career could be still have room to grow. You know what I mean? It's really, we need more.
This feels like someone who's being held back. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Someone's telling this man not to put this weird shit in this game, right?
Yeah,
someone's
if telling only him they would just give him more creative freedom, you know?
Let me get a director's cut of Death Stranding 2, please.
Oh man, yeah, very cool. The other funny thing is that I was joking that trailer is 9 minutes long. It actually kind of moves, which was surprising to me.
Yeah, it really does. I'm so fascinated by what the world would look like if there were more Kojimas, you know, from trailer production to like game design. It just I don't know if there's enough room for more than one. Maybe more than two. With a Sam Lake.
We'd need to construct a bridge to the beach in order to find another one. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, we'd have to split Kojima's ha and ka into two separate people.
All right. Let's leave it there for this week. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. If you want to re-listen to our Death Stranding debrief, you can, and you can find it wherever you find podcasts. iTunes, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, all those places. Do us a favor, leave us a review, and tell a friend.
All right, everyone. As always, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.